KFM West Sacramento, KRXQ HD2 Sacramento,
ESPN 1320, Sacramento sports leader. Always live on the Odyssey app. It's time now to go beyond the headlines, and for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Well, good morning, everybody. A happy Monday to you. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil is over there as well. We're the Insiders, and Jiffy Lube sponsors this program. Thank you, everybody, listening on the radio at ESPN 1320 AM. Everybody listening on the free Odyssey app, thank you. If you're listening to the podcast, the James Hamm and Kyle Madsen Show, hello from the past. Hope the future's going well, and we thank you for listening. And everybody in the chatty house, youtube.com/ESPN1320, twitch.tv/ESPN1320. Good morning, hello, and we appreciate most of you. So I got a couple different ways I want to go here.
Okay.
Let's start with Friday. The Kings lose to the Suns, 122-106. Domantas Sabonis has a nice little triple-double. But outside of Sabonis looking like Sabonis finally, I don't have... I'm running out of things to say, which is not good given the medium. But when Doug Christie the other night says, "That's not us," after they lost to the Knicks, well, it was you three games in a row now.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is, and we said this after the loss to Golden State, my concern is not, oh, the Kings have checked out. My concern is, oh, this is just kind of what they are. I don't think there's been, I don't think they're not trying, save for Zach LaVine, we'll get there. But this, to me, is not a matter of effort. This is not a matter of, oh, man, they're just getting out-schemed. I just think that their roster has very, very glaring flaws. And teams have gotten enough games against the Kings and enough tape of this version of the Kings that, yeah, hey, you know what? This is how you attack them. This is how you beat them.
Yeah, I feel like this team has to be motivated differently, like, every 2 weeks. And that, to me, is not a good thing. That just shows you that...
That's crazy.
That they just aren't grasping the basics of being, like, at the end of the day, good teammates.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this feels like a very, very selfish basketball team. It feels like a bunch of dudes who are just playing... I don't want to say playing out the string as much as they just have an eye on the scoreboard. Except for Zach LaVine, who should have his eye on the scoreboard. At least baffling. A little bit.
It's baffling.
You know, to me, I don't know how else to explain it. They just look like 8 or 9 individuals that are playing on a court. And
yeah.
You got a couple of guys who are doing things that are team-related things. And even when Domantas Sabonis steps on the court, you know, he finishes with a triple-double, mm-hmm. right? It's only like his 9th triple-double of the season after leading last year.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was excellent at distributing and rebounding. And you know, mm-hmm. again, he's beat up. Like, you can see it. We saw when Ryan Dunn threw him around and he instantly mm-hmm. grabbed his hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't feel it from the rest of the group. It's like, how can you go out and literally tell the media that the one thing you learned while you were sitting out for 3 games watching was that you need to be a better distributor and set your teammates up if you're Malik Monk, and then go out and lead the team in field goal attempts 3 straight games?
If you're leading the team in field goal attempts and also dishing out like 10 assists, it'd be one thing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't appear that Malik Monk is doing anything different. In fact, he's probably doing a worse job of setting up his teammates than he was before he got hurt.
Yes.
If you do understand, please call the Oak Grove Kia Talk Line, 916-909-1320. That's 916-909-1320. It's not even like anger or I don't even know the right adjective other than like this is just meh.
It's disappointing.
Disappointing's a good one.
I'd also like the reality of it is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Like watching and going, oh, okay, you're probably right, Kyle. This is who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always been waiting for this team to gel. And I think they were gelling. They were, you know, before they had the two injuries to Monk and Simone, to say it started to play some good basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this isn't all on Malik Monk. I'm not blaming anything on, you know, he's the representative of what this thing looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because he's the one who said, hey, I need to do this better, and then doesn't try to do that better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a problem when you're looking at players who, again, for years I've covered so many head coaches. There was one head coach here in Sacramento who always had these epiphany moments and like, I think I figured it out exactly what's wrong with us. And then he had no answer to fix what was wrong. And it was like, hey, you probably shouldn't tell us about your epiphany,
right?
About being able to fix, you know, about what's wrong,
mm-hmm.
if you don't have the cure for what's wrong.
Be a problem solver, not a problem identifier.
Yeah, exactly. And so we always got to this point where it's like, okay, yeah, we were at that problem like 3 weeks ago, bro.
Yeah.
We saw that problem a while ago. Like, where's your solution? Well, with this team specifically, it's just really tough to mix everything up at the end of the season. And if things go really well, then you cook, right? Though we saw it last year with the Dallas Mavericks. When you make a big, a couple of additions, sometimes you just find something and you cook. But for the most part, when you decide to trade a franchise player and then add another two pieces on top of that.
After changing your coach.
Yeah, after changing your coach. The results are usually exactly what we're seeing right now. The Kings are lucky. They're a 500 basketball team. They're just floating there.
Yeah.
And there's a good chance they'll drop below 500 over the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
They might not get back to 500. They might get back to 500. We don't know, but it doesn't matter. They're probably going to balance out right around the 500 mark on the season. And it's a disappointing season because I think that we all had higher hopes for who this group might be. And to watch this thing twist and turn and, you know, literally take like so many detours mm-hmm. along the way is pretty disappointing.
You talk about disappointment, and I want to get to that for sure. But I want to make sure that this is clear up top too. Any individual player we talk about today, any individual player that gets brought up in the Chatty House or on the Elk Grove Kid Talk Line, whatever it is, there's no one person who's to blame for what's happening to the Kings right now.
Oh, no.
We're going to talk about individual aspects of what's going wrong and what has gone wrong, but that is not to lay the blame at the feet of DeMar DeRozan or Malik Monk or Keegan Murray or Zach LaVine or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of stuff wrong, and we're going to get to all of it. We're going to try and get to all of it.
Yeah.
But is this the most, and now keep in mind, and I'm asking this literally, typically what you do in this spot is you like give a hard take on something, but I'm going to ask you and I'm going to ask Kings fans because my in-depth following of the Kings started in 2011 when I started interning at their flagship station, and I followed them really close through there. Is this because for me it is the most disappointing Kings season ever?
Okay, so this is my 15th year covering the team.
Right.
Right. I can think of one other season where I thought, holy cow, this is horribly disappointing. And it was Dave Yeager's first year coaching the team, the 2016-17 season. And this is a year that they went out and they loaded up in the offseason. They brought in Aaron mm-hmm. Aflalo. They brought in Matt Barnes. They brought Omri Caspi back. You know, they had Darren Collison and Willie Cauley-Stein, DeMarcus Cousins, Rudy Gay.
Sure.
They had Costa Kufis. Mm-hmm. They had Scalabissier as a young player. They had Ben McLemore. They had, Malachi and Garrett Temple and Anthony Tolliver was the other player they went out and added during the offseason. Like, they added talent to this mm-hmm. roster trying to get them over the hump. And not only did that season spin out instead of making the playoffs, which is what that roster looked like when they first were put together,
mm-hmm.
they went 32-50. They traded DeMarcus Cousins. Rudy Gay popped his Achilles. They waived Matt Barnes. Omri Caspi was sent back in. Tyreke Evans came in as part of the trade. They got Buddy Hield in that trade. Like, that was one of the more disappointing seasons. But for me, this one probably takes the cake because it didn't have to be this way. And that's what we're always going to come back to. Like, why did this season spin out? And, like, that's where you start to like push blame, in my opinion. Like this season did not have to go this way at all. There were so many other pathways and so many other opportunities to change the trajectory of this team, and they didn't. And then when they did do it, it was so dramatic that this is what we're left with.
It feels like the delta between, like, because we're at the Cal Classic game when DeMar DeRozan came out with Vivek courtside. Everybody's there. They're playing the Kendrick Lamar song, and it's like, oh, hey, they traded for DeMar DeRozan. He is here. Like, oh my God, that's a piece. We talked about their roster needed to be better, and we looked at it, and we go, okay, they got better players. They got a better roster. Here's how he fits. Okay, we love this. They went 48 wins, playoffs, 46 wins, out in the play-in, but hey, this is the bounce back. Here we go. To this, to their 33-33, and when you look at their schedule, it's like, can they get to 500?
By the end of the season, I don't know.
I don't think I'd bet on it.
Yeah, it that would be a tough bet.
I just don't, there's no reason to give them the benefit of the doubt at this point. I have no reason to go, oh yeah, they're going to go in and they're going to beat Memphis tonight. They're going to bounce back and beat Memphis. I think maybe, but I have no reason to believe that. I have no reason to believe that they're going to go in and beat Milwaukee or Boston or OKC or Cleveland. I think you have Golden State again. You don't have Golden State again.
No, but you do have the Clippers again.
You have the Clippers again.
You have Phoenix again.
Yeah, right. There's no reason for me to go, oh yeah, that's you can go get that game. Because, like, hey, you're going to be an underdog in that game. Might be an underdog against Phoenix by the end of the year. I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's just, it feels so, like, last year was a little underwhelming, to be sure. But it didn't feel like the end of the road. Whereas this season has not only been horribly underwhelming, like, we were talking 50-plus wins before the year.
Oh, yeah.
Not only has it been horribly underwhelming, it also feels like, oh, the path forward is now muddy. The path forward is no longer clear. At least last year, you go to 46, and it's like, all right, you still won 46 or three or four games where you hit a couple of free throws, and you're at 50 wins. Not super worried about it. You got DeMar DeRozan in here now. You didn't trade any major pieces. You still got some roster flaws, but hey, the roster's better. Here we go. To 33-33, and you've lost four consecutive games. Well, the Clippers have won three straight, immediately ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
Two spots ahead of you are the Timberwolves, who have won eight straight.
Yep.
And three spots ahead of you are the Warriors, who have won seven straight.
You remember when we told you, Kyle, that in the after the All-Star game, that's when the real teams like rise, and the other teams sink? Like, it's unfortunate.
Yep.
But, and you know, to your point, like, I think that's why when we start looking at this thing long term and you know, what does this thing look like in the future and all that stuff, I think that's where you start seeing alarm bells for certain things that are happening on the floor. That's where realistically the Zach LaVine question comes in.
Yes.
Is that there's, like, if you're not out there and you're not hearing alarm bells and you're not paying attention. And three of the biggest games that you've had this season, games that were winnable. Games against the New York Knicks without Jalen Brunson, games a back-to-back against the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Clippers. He just didn't shoot. He stopped playing his game. Like, again, Zach LaVine is on the court for one reason, and it's to score. He's a decent distributor, but he's not a great distributor.
Nope.
He's not a great defensive player. Like, he's not a great rebounder. He's on the court to score, for him to take 10 shots and then back that up with six shots. And then this last game was almost like he was like, ah, shoot, everyone's going to be mad because I only have six shots through three quarters. And so he took seven shots in the fourth quarter to score, you know, 21 points. But it just, the game was over, and he was non-existent throughout the rest of it. And then that's when you point some of this out, and then Bulls fans start just jumping on me in social media, like, oh, welcome to the Zach LaVine experience.
Yeah, that's apparently a thing.
And then it was like, oh boy. That's when you're starting to get concerned about, like, well, what does this look like? In some of the biggest moments, you want your players to step up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've talked about this in the past, like TNT Malik, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever TNT is in town, Malik Monk is ready to roll. That's what you're hoping that you get out of your players, the guys that rise to the occasion. And I'm just like, I'm baffled with what's happened here over the last, you know, 3-4 games.
We'll dig in more to the Zach LaVine stuff because I think it matters a lot, not only for trying to salvage anything out of this season, but for moving forward. And with that in mind, I think I'm going to rock with Zach LaVine and underdog tonight, or at least I'm going to put him in my lineup.
Okay.
So I've won 2 straight lineups, not to brag. I've decided I want to put together a 6-player lineup tonight on underdog. This is Underdog Daily Fantasy. Download the Underdog app. Take a look around. It's a ton of fun. If you sign up, use promo code KYLM. I'd appreciate the hell out of it. Here's what I'm looking at tonight. Zach LaVine. Is he going to make or miss his first 3? I think he's going to make it. Because I don't think he's taking it unless it's like a wide open catch and shoot.
Wait, you can choose his first 3?
Yes.
Oh my make gosh.
I'm going make.
Okay.
Because I don't know if he's going to shoot a bunch of them. But when he does put them up, he's making them right now.
Yes.
And I don't think you're going to see him dribble into like a forced step back contested 3. I think he's only going to take it if he's open. And if you get Zach LaVine shooting an open 3, I feel good about it. Domantas Sabonis, 22.5 points and assists. I'm going higher.
I'm going higher too because he's due for a big offensive breakout game.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you get, I need 18 points.
I just worry that Zach Edey is too tall.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
But we'll see.
DeMar DeRozan, 21.5 points. I'm going higher. Because I think that's why DeMar DeRozan is playing basketball right now.
Yep.
I don't think he's super interested in the standings. I don't think he's super interested in the play-in. I think DeMar DeRozan wants to score points.
Okay.
So I'm going higher than 21.5. Malik Monk, 5.5 assists. I'm going higher.
Now that's bold.
Yeah. Yeah, just... even through this stretch where he's not distributing as much, he had 5 assists last game. 18 field goal attempts, but he had 5 assists. I think that's something. A couple days off, I think he comes back and has at least 6 assists tonight. Keon Ellis, 11.5 points, rebounds, and assists for Keon.
Oh.
That feels easy, right?
It does.
But almost to the point that I want to go lower. Because why is that number so low? But he might hit 4 threes and just get to the points.
I think he's going to get plenty of time, too, playing against Desmond Bane.
Yeah.
Especially with John Morant out.
Yeah. So I like Keon Ellis higher than 11.5 points, rebounds, assists. And you got to throw a player from another team in there. So I'm going with the Sacramento kid, Jalen Wells, higher than 9.5 points. Good shooter. Get some open looks. I need 3 threes and then a bucket. I think I can get that. Give me Jalen Wells at 10 points.
I'm here for it all, Kyle.
I'm super excited for Thursday because that's when March college basketball really starts, and then we can really get into it. We can get to the nitty-gritty with Underdog, and we're going to help you out because my bracket is going to get busted very early on, but Underdog's going to be there to save me, so I'm going to have action on every single game. Download the Underdog app and sign up now using promo code KYLM. That's KYLM. To unlock a special offer of up to $1,000 in bonus credits when you make your first deposit. Join in on the fun when you sign up with promo code KYLM. Claim your special offer today and get up to $1,000 in bonus credits instantly upon first deposit. Must be 18 plus and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Void where prohibited. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. In New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. All right, what the hell's going on with Zach LaVine? And can the Kings salvage this thing? Plus, the 49ers made a very weird move over the weekend. We'll talk about it next on The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube at ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Sac Hoop updates on ESPN 1320 are brought to you by Capital Casino, Sacramento's number one poker room featuring breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the Capital Cafe and Restaurant. Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Oh, hell yeah. Our guy Norm's on his way to Disneyland. Salute.
Enjoy. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. So we're talking just real quick, just very briefly. We're talking about video games at the Brink. And I was saying I haven't played video games in a while. And then I said I played a lot of Final Fantasy VII growing up. And A.R. Holden in the chat said they have the remakes of VII. That would require me to buy a new console, though.
Oh.
To spend a bunch of time playing a thing that I should probably not spend my time doing. It's so tempting. I want to play the new Final Fantasy VII so bad. But that is not the correct time management and financial decision for me at this point in my life. Salute to me. I'm being smart. Anyways. Dynamite drop in, James.
My bad. My kids have all of them, all of the consoles. I don't know what to say, Kyle.
That's all good. We'll get back to the Kings and what the hell's going on with Zach LaVine. I got some 49ers news from over the weekend. Kyle Juszczyk is now back with the 49ers on a 2-year, $8 million deal.
What happened there, Kyle? I'm so confused.
So I haven't seen the structure of his new contract, which that's always the thing that smart people say with the NFL. I got to wait for the structure, and that's true. Like it's a funny thing, but it's also true. Because not every 2-year, $8 million deal is going to be created equal in the NFL, right? Or typically it's bigger money that matters. But I think what they're doing is they're taking all these void years that they've put on all these old contracts, which is something you can do to spread the cap hits out.
Yeah.
It's a 4-year deal, but it's got like 2 void years on it. So the team just creates basically dead cap out of the gate.
It's a signing bonus.
Basically, yeah.
Basically, they have to prorate the signing bonus over 4 years, so whatever's left after the 2 years, that last 2 years is typically what's left of signing bonus.
Sure. So they are, I think what they did was they cut Juszczyk so they could accelerate, he has $3.5 million in dead money, I believe. They can accelerate that $3.5 million in dead money to this year.
Okay.
They're paying that this year. It's dead money on their cap. And then they gave him a new deal that was structured differently. I'm assuming it's a true like 2 years, $8 million. There's not going to be like a void year with dead money on it or anything.
Of course.
Like that. Because they want to, we've talked about this a lot. They want to make sure that they're not paying these big dead money numbers while also paying Brock Purdy top of market value or top 10 value with Nick Bosa and Fred Warner and all of these other guys. And potentially if Dominic Pooney is this dominant offensive lineman that they have to keep around. Mm-hmm. All right, hey, now they have some free space to pay him out and keep him in the building. Like that's what they're hoping to do, is be able to pay a new core of players. So with Juszczyk, again, my assumption is this new deal will be structured differently than his old one, but they're just going to eat the dead money this year.
Yeah.
So they don't have to worry about it in future years.
Yeah, it seems interesting because it couldn't have been that much in dead money. Would you say like 3.5 million? Yeah, it almost feels like, you know, was there a way to do this without waiving him and like just keep him around? But hey, look, they have a much better understanding. It just seems like they're doing some weird, like small amounts of money penny pinching. You know, like even the Leonard Floyd, right?
Yeah.
When they cut him, they saved like $1.4 million. It was like, that doesn't seem like a lot to save.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not, I assume there's some kind of plan here. Because dead money is money they've paid already. It's not like additional.
Like they're not writing a check.
Yeah, that's just dead salary cap money.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly what they're doing here. My guess is they're just taking every little bit that they can. And what cutting a guy like Leonard Floyd does is it creates an opening that when you get a young player in the building, like they just have to play.
No, that's a good thing.
Yeah, because I think that's been a huge problem with their 22 and 23 draft classes and to a lesser extent 21. Is like, hey man, just they drafted a bunch of guys who didn't get an opportunity to play, or they had to be perfect to get on the field, and then they're losing 2 or 3 years of development sitting behind Leonard Floyd.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I guess they also traded Jordan Mason. I cannot believe the amount of backlash that they got for trading their third running back.
But their third running back, who was third in the NFL in rushing yards before McCaffrey came back.
Yeah, totally. led the team in rushing last season. Good player, no doubt. But we have to be realistic about this, at least a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
One, Jordan Mason, not a good receiver, not a good pass catcher.
Nope.
That is going to be a problem for the 49ers. So they put a second round tender on him, which meant they were going to pay him a little over $5 million this year, fully guaranteed. And then in the offseason, he was going to walk. They weren't going to pay him. He wasn't going to play much this year, assuming, and again, you can't really assume health, but follow me. Assuming Christian McCaffrey and Isaac Garendo are both around, he was the very firm third running back. So what they've now done is they ensured that he stayed in San Francisco with the second round tender, because what that does for restricted free agents with the second round tender is I place a second round tender on Jordan Mason.
Mm-hmm.
You, James, want to sign him to an offer sheet. You sign him to an offer sheet. That gets sent back to me. If I don't want to match, you owe me a second round pick.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Right? So no team was going to do that. But the Niners also weren't going to make him the 18th highest paid running back to be the third running back on their roster.
Yeah.
So they go, hey, does anybody want this guy? Is there anybody out there who will trade for him? The Vikings say, yep, you give us him and a sixth round pick. We'll give you a fifth round pick and a sixth round pick next year, and we'll cash him out. He's going to get $7 million guaranteed. He gets a two-year deal, or two-year deal, I think it was, and he gets cashed out this year. Here we go. He backs up Aaron Jones. We're all set. Mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
Like, the Niners got an asset for a player who theoretically wasn't going to play a lot. And we constantly get on them about their investment in the running back position. Well, you overpaid Christian McCaffrey, and you overpaid for Christian McCaffrey. That was the critique when they traded for him. And then they redid his deal.
Mm-hmm.
And now they don't want to have to pay a third running back. They're going to do the thing that everybody has always wanted them to do, and they're just going to draft somebody instead. Instead of having another top 20 paid running back on their books. Like, it just makes sense to me. And maybe I'm dramatically underrating Jordan Mason's value here. But if he was your third running back and you didn't like him as a receiver, which is valuable in your offense, it seems better to get assets for him instead of just letting him walk for free next offseason.
Yeah, I get you, and I'm with you on that, right? Like, you have to manage each position on the field very specifically, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would also point out that McCaffrey is, not just as a 49er, not just last season,
mm-hmm.
he has a long history of missing games.
No doubt.
And Garendo, like, was perfectly fine, right? And he does a lot of the things that we're talking about. He catches the ball out of the backfield. I think that he can actually be used as like a third down back and like all these different things, right? You can even maybe use him in a Debo situation where you put him out on the side and you have him come around, do the end around or whatever,
mm-hmm.
right? So I like that player, like, and what he kind of represents. Mm-hmm. But I also, I'm slightly concerned that a 28, 29-year-old Christian McCaffrey might not hold up long-term, and that Mason, like, it's an expensive insurance policy, but, again, they're going to go out and they're going to find somebody else in the draft. They'll probably waste a third-round pick that on a guy that will bust, because that's typically what they do.
Sure.
And they just have a much better track record of finding guys, like, later than that.
Mm-hmm.
That end up being really good, solid, you know, one-cut runners. And so I think that they can probably fill the void, but I also think that this is one of those plays where, man, you had somebody who was good and who did well for you last year, and it's a little tough to see them, you know, get swap a fifth for a sixth and pick up a sixth-round pick or a seventh-round
sure.
pick next
yeah,
year.
Yeah, sixth-round pick next year. Yeah, it's not... Again, if they had tried to trade him mid-season last year and there was a team that badly needed a running back, yeah, you're probably getting a lot more for him than this.
Yeah.
But it's the value of it, right? You found Elijah Mitchell in the sixth round. Jordan Mason himself was undrafted. Matt Breida, who had success with the 49ers, undrafted.
Mm-hmm.
Raheem Mostert, who had success with the 49ers, granted he wasn't an undrafted free agent or an undrafted rookie with them, but undrafted guy who eventually found success with the 49ers. Like, this is the whole thing. Like the whole point of the Shanahan thing is, yeah, anybody can plug and play and be a running back.
Yep.
So if you have a chance to get an asset for one and then just draft another one that you feel good about, plus you have Patrick Taylor, who looked really good in the season finale last year, he's back.
Yeah. I'm okay with it.
I don't think it's as dire as it got. It's not like he was their starting running back and now they have nobody in their backfield.
Yeah.
You're
right. It's not like he was your starting defensive tackle and you know.
And you just released him for apparently no reason. Yeah, no, it's not like that for sure. Yeah, now you definitely need to find another running back that you really like.
Okay.
I have not done the deep dive on late round running backs this year, but people who are smart with the NFL draft really like this year's draft class. Maybe the Niners really like this year's class and they go, hey, there's two or three guys that we think we can get that can be as good or better than Jordan Mason. And we feel good about it. And here we go. We're just going to get this asset. We're going to move on.
Yeah. I think everybody wants Scadabo. There we go.
Yeah. Sac State legend. Stingers up. Why not?
Bring him in.
I'm going to be so interested to see what the evaluation of him is in the NFL.
Mainly, everything says third round pick.
Yeah, I maybe, but he's one of those guys that not super big, not super fast. Remember Toby Gerhart?
Yeah, or touchdown Tommy Vardell.
Sure, that goes over my head, but yeah, where the bowling ball really hard to tackle thing doesn't always translate. Frank Gore Jr., another one.
Oh,
sometimes that just doesn't translate in the NFL, and that would be, but I have no idea. Maybe teams just love him. And
yeah, I mean, at worst case scenario, he looks like he could play fullback.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway.
I wouldn't be mad at it. Cam Scadabo, future 49er. Anyways. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm underreacting to the quote-unquote dismantling of the 49ers. Maybe they're going to go. But, they were 6-11 last year, man. This is my thing. Their run defense sucked, and they cut their starting defensive tackle. Oh, no.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. But at the same time, the defensive tackle was playing with one of the worst linebackers behind him that we've ever seen. Fred Warner was great, but his partner was...
Yeah, Devondre Campbell wasn't very good, no doubt.
Yeah, who quit at the end of the season. I mean, just wasn't very good the entire year.
Sure.
So, I mean, I'm not going to put all the run game issues on one guy.
Yeah, plus, no, that's not what I'm doing. This exodus of the 49ers have lost all their best players. No, they haven't.
Yeah.
I don't understand why that is a talking point.
No, I'm with you.
Talanoa Hufanga, not that good. Can we keep it a stack? Can we be adults here for a second? And instead of going, wow, he looks like Troy Polamalu. No, he doesn't.
Just because he has long hair.
Just because he has long hair. what are we talking about?
Yeah.
The dude, for every splash play he has, he gives up an explosive play because he's out of position.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most, his all-pro in 2022 is the most fraudulent all-pro nod I've ever seen in my freaking life. The Dre Greenlaw loss, that hurts, no doubt. Replacing Dre Greenlaw is going to be very tough.
But even that one, you had no idea if he's ever going to be the same player he was ever again. Yeah.
No doubt. But again, I personally would have kept him around, but that's a separate thing. But losing Aaron Banks, who cares?
Yeah.
Losing Leonard Floyd, okay, cool, man. Name your favorite Leonard Floyd moment from last year.
Yeah, I don't have one.
You don't have one. Because he never had an impact.
Yeah.
Malik Collins had 5 sacks. That's a nice year for defensive tackle. He was fine. He was a fine player. This is not wow, the Niners lost Nick Bosa and Christian McCaffrey and Fred Warner. Oh my God, what are they going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they lost some starters and some rotational pieces, no doubt. And they need to fill those, and is filling those through the draft going to be super easy? Not necessarily.
Yeah,
this idea they lost all their best players is just insane to me. They went 6-11 last year, and now they're trying to retool. Makes sense.
Yeah, even watching Debo, Debo was just a shell. Just an absolute shell of himself.
Thank you.
And I know people are, oh, well, how are you going to replace him? Well, Do you need to replace him? Because what you got from him last year wasn't good enough. Just straight up, it wasn't good. And Juwan Jennings was twice wide receiver that he was. Yep. He wasn't good as a running back anymore. Like, I don't know what exactly. Like, I get what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
That you kept, still you have the core, mm-hmm. but you got a lot of work to do now.
You definitely and do.
The fact that not only did they take the first couple of days off of free agency, but realistically, they took the entire free agency period
off. They have done
off.
Very little.
Absolutely nothing to replace the defensive tackles or even bring in guard depth on the mm-hmm. offensive line or someone to compete with like a really poor Colt McKivitz at right guard. Mm-hmm. Like there's nothing mm-hmm. that they've added that would make you think that they're building some of these crucial mm-hmm. positions on the field. So they got to have a great draft, mm-hmm. but then you still need more help. You're still going to need veterans. You're going to have to yeah. find guys that can fill some of these holes.
It wouldn't shock me if we see the free agency signings kind of die for now.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the draft, once they no longer factor into the comp pick formula, I think that's when you'll start seeing teams revamp and make free agency plays to fill some of the holes they weren't able to fill in the draft.
Well, that I could also see them going out and making some trades. Like,
maybe.
Yeah, go, you know, take a 6th-round pick or a 5th-round pick or a 7th-round pick and go start filling some of the holes
that
you have
with
in
Malik
your roster.
Collins last year.
Yep.
7th-round pick out for him and got a guy who started 17 games for him, only to get cut. all right, let's get back into the Kings. They have a matchup tonight against the Memphis Grizzlies that we will dive into. And we'll get to the Zach LaVine stuff as well, because that is just baffling to me, and I would like to try and understand it. That's James. I'm Kyle. Joe Brazil's here. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Chris Granger is the name I was thinking of.
Oh, Chris Granger. He did leave it. He took over
partnerships, right?
Tigers. I think he oversees both the Tigers and the Red Wings.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. He
was
like,
he not involved in the Caesars? Okay. Not Caesars. What's their thing called? Their arena called?
Oh, and is it Little Caesars?
Little Caesars Arena? Whatever.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, he was here. Okay, so Chris Granger came to Sacramento as part of Teambo, the NBA's group that came in to figure out what had gone wrong with the Maloofs and mm-hmm. you know, how could they fix what was happening. And then when Vivek bought the team, they ended up extending to Chris Granger the president of the Kings, and he came aboard not as the basketball side, but on the business side.
I see.
He helped Golden One get built. He helped the transition from Arco to there. And all of the early stuff. Chris Granger,
salute.
Absolutely brilliant.
Salute.
And a great dude. The other guy we were talking about on the break is Ken Catanella.
Sure.
Who, he was a salary cap guru here with Vlade. And he was famous for the 3-year contract, but the 2-year guaranteed, 3rd year's team option.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a Ken Catanella special. Very, very good salary cap guy, which kept leaving the Kings in good salary cap situation.
That's good. All right. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil behind the glass. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. And the Kings take on the Memphis Grizzlies tonight at Golden One Center. The teams are 1-1 this season. The Grizzlies 43-25. They've won 5 of their last 6. I think Memphis is a really tough matchup for the Kings because they have a team full of dudes who do all the stuff that we want the Kings to do more of.
Yeah.
Like they have a bunch of dudes who play the sport like Jake LaRavia does. And Jake LaRavia stands out so much when he plays for the Kings because it's like, oh, wow, look at that guy. That guy running around and just getting to loose balls and chasing guys around screens and getting an extra rebound and just doing all this stuff, hitting a big three. It feels like Memphis has a ton of those guys and the Kings have like 2.
Well, their G League team is called the Memphis Hustle.
And boy, do they.
And that's exactly, they have a culture of hustle.
Yes.
And it's something that, like, that's something you have to find. You have to create that. However, that's being created in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
that's, I think, one of the core things that moving forward, if Doug Christie or someone else is a head coach, they have to look at that. How do we get to a point where our team plays the most ridiculously, like, hard-fought 48 minutes you're ever going to see? Mm-hmm. Like, you can be up by 9 points with, like, a minute five left against the Grizzlies, and they're going to make you play out every single play. They're going to foul you. They're going to put you on the line. They're going to try to get the steal, and if they don't get the steal in the first 8 seconds, they're going to foul you.
Yep.
You're going to have to earn every single win against them, and it's a mindset that we haven't seen a lot of in the NBA, where it's almost like a college atmosphere, where, you know, they'll switch in a bunch of guys and, you know, like, they'll do line changes. They'll do all kinds of things to keep guys fresh. The problem that they've had there is that, you know, they've had a lot of off the court stuff, and then they've had massive, massive amounts of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of taken away from who they were, but that's why they were bad last year. And here they are back at number two in the Western Conference. Like, they're just a team that doesn't stop fighting.
Yeah.
And that's why I do believe Jake LaRavia stands out, because that's how he's been brought up in the league.
Yep.
So go get more of those guys. If they're giving away any other players,
yeah,
go ahead and go get them.
This Do a little recruiting tonight if you need to.
Yeah, this is what the Spurs used to be like. You used to want to go get Spurs players after they were done with playing for the Spurs, because high basketball IQ players, they know their role.
Yep.
It's been ingrained with them. And the Kings have gone through a bunch of guys that came from the Spurs organization, whether it's Trey Lyles or Chimezie Metu, Garrett Temple. Like, there are a bunch of guys, and it's, or Marco Bellinelli. They know their role, they play hard, and they give you everything they have when they're on the court.
Yep.
So create that atmosphere here.
Yeah, that's I think what Doug Christie's trying to do.
Yeah.
While also trying to make the playoffs or the play-in. Not an easy thing to do in half a season under these circumstances, but alas. That's the reason going into this game, even with Ja Morant not playing. It's the reason I have concerns for the Kings. Like, I don't know if it matters who's playing for Memphis. I think they're just going to be a team that matches up, is a difficult matchup, because they're going to win the 50-50 ball. They're going to contest a shot that you didn't think they were going to contest. They're going to get to a rebound you didn't think they were going to get to. And if Sacramento gets to that point where, and that's kind of what we talk about with kind of all the overlapping parts. Like, they don't have enough guys who, hey, your role is this. Your role is to just play 1,000 miles an hour for however long you're on the court and make an impact that way. Get an open three, shoot it. You get a driving lane, take it. But get rebounds, play hard-nosed defense. That's what they're going to do.
I think it's why not just Jake LaRavia, but also Keon Ellis stands out with the Kings.
Yep. Keon's just the other guy I was referring to.
You just look at him and you're just like, oh, all right. Well, that makes sense. Like, they just play a chaotic style that they look like they're out of control, but they're really not.
Yeah. There's a really good article by James Herbert in CBS Sports.
Oh, of course.
Where he wrote about the Grizzlies offense, which is basically borrowed from a D3 school. Friend of the program, Stan Van Gundy's quoted a lot in this article. And they have taken that kind of chaos and organized it offensively. And it's why they've been so dangerous offensively this year. Like, when you watch them, they never stop moving. They never get into like a set, okay, we're just going to go four out, one on one. That doesn't happen. It is movement. It is filling space. It is what they call a space invasion sport.
Yeah.
And they've just taken this hustle mentality, and they've put it into their offense, where now they're getting a ton of layups and a ton of threes.
Yeah, that's intriguing. I'm excited to watch them play, because every time we see them play, they're shorthanded.
Yeah.
And they're going to be shorthanded again tonight.
Yep.
You know, but at the end of the day, this is a team that has figured it out and are right back in the top of the Western Conference standings after a down year.
Yep.
And a bunch of off-the-court chaos that made it a down year, and a bunch of injuries.
Starting lineups for tonight. Guessing it's the usual suspects for the Kings: Monk, LaVine, DeRozan, Murray, and Sabonis. For the Grizzlies, no Ja Morant. You think Scottie Pippen Jr. starts?
Scottie Pippen Jr. is questionable for tonight.
Mm.
I did look. Luke Kennard started last game
Okay.
For them with Ja Morant out, so Yeah, he's starting the backcourt, Desmond Bane.
Okay, with Jalen Wells, Jaren Jackson Jr., and then Zach Edey, that huge front line for Memphis. It's interesting they go Luke Kennard. Guess
well,
why not?
He's, I think, leading the NBA in three-point yeah. percentage again. Yeah. The dude can flat-out shoot.
We mentioned Ja Morant's out. Santi Aldama's doubtful. Scottie Pippen Jr. just mentioned is questionable. Anything for the Kings?
Yeah, as of right now, we've got questionable for Trey Lyles. The Santi Aldama doubtful is actually really big for the Kings. That guy tears up Sacramento.
Good player.
He is a good player. He's a very, very good three-point shooter. And every single time you play them, it feels like he gets maybe four or five threes that just keep them in the game during certain stints.
Yep.
And so not having him would be a big deal for them tonight.
And again, he is doubtful, so looks like he's not going to play. He did not play in their January matchup, which the Kings actually won. But to your point, back in December when they played, he was 6 of 8 from the field, 3 of 3 from three. He had 15 points and 10 boards.
Yeah. He's just impactful.
Yep.
Yeah, I like him as a player.
Matchup of the game for me, I tried to James this one where I didn't do two players. Kings versus the Doldrums.
Yeah.
This is a spot where your season, and if you think the season's already over, so be it. But realistically, it's teetering. It is on life support. And this is a spot where you can feel that urgency and you can play with that urgency. Or you can go, well, lost 4 in a row, probably stuck in the play-in, haven't been playing well. All the teams in front of us playing great. What are you going to do?
Yeah, we have like measuring stick games. I think this is a will you hold on to the rope game? Because if not, this is going to be a horrible week of Kings basketball. And if you let go of the rope tonight, you have got to fight and you got to play this team well. If you let go of the rope tonight, the schedule just gets more and more brutal. You got a game against the Bulls, but after that, it's just the schedule is reckless.
Yeah, man. And it's just, we talk about building that culture.
Mm-hmm.
To me, if you're Doug Christie and you're the Kings, well, if you're the Kings and you believe that Doug Christie is going to be the guy going forward, this is a time of year where you're going to figure out who's going to be a valuable piece moving forward and who's not.
Yeah.
Because if you've got somebody coming out and not doing the right stuff to help the team, if you've got somebody going and playing outside of what they're supposed to be doing offensively or defensively, or they're just not getting it, or they're just not hustling, they're just not playing hard. All right, great. Told us everything you need to know about that player. Because realistically, yes, are the Kings playing well? No. Are they, what are they, 4 back of the 8 seed now? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
4 games back of the 8 seed? Like mathematically, you can still climb. Realistically, are you going to? Eh. But that's for us to talk about. That's not for you as a player to decide going into a game, we're probably stuck in the 9 seed, so let's just coast here. Like, no. Go win 5 in a row. Go try and get back. Go swing an upset against one of these teams that everybody's decided you're not going to beat.
Yep.
Go have that level of pride. Go show that Doug was right when after the next game he said, that's not us. Because since then, yeah, it's been you. I would like to see them come out tonight and play with the urgency of a team that is closer to falling out of the play-in entirely than hosting a play-in game.
Yeah, that's what you're hoping, that they come out and they show pride.
Mm-hmm.
They're kicking off a 7-game homestand that's absolutely brutal.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, you're on your home court. This is your fan base. Mm-hmm. Like, show up.
Yep.
Like, take pride in what you're doing. And I know that's a big thing for Doug. Like, this is a community that supported him for decades. Like, take pride.
That's it.
Show up for these for these fans.
Quick correction before we step aside. The Kings would currently, in the 9 seed, host a play-in game. I meant host a win-or-go-home game.
Yeah.
In the matchup for the 8 seed, but semantics. They're 2 games out of falling out of the play-in entirely. That was my point. Go play with that urgency. All right. That's James. I'm Kyle. Joe Brazil's here. Can the Kings snap their 4-game losing skid tonight against Memphis? We'll have keys to victory coming up for you in a bit right here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento Sports Leader.